Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Jim Dennis, and I'm a resident of Dalton, New Hampshire. And I have my wife, Sandy, and my daughter, Larissa, with me, and I'm speaking on their behalf as well. I have submitted to you in writing an analysis of this bill and the reasons why we support it. I'm not going to go through anything that I wrote except for page 8. And so if you have time, just turn it to page 8, and we'll get to there in a second. There are so many points here that could be rebutted, but there's not time. I'll just stick to one. Mr. Funstein said that at the same time 12A was adopted, the legislature worked carefully to make it clear that public utility takings are a public use. I would respectfully say there's a very big difference between a piece of legislation and a constitutional provision. The people of New Hampshire adopted 12A by an 85% vote. I read the text of the amendment. I read the voting guide presented to them. There is nothing there that in any way suggests that eminent domain authority should be available for private development projects. I'm actually surprised that the dialogue has gone the way it has at this meeting. Having spent a great deal of time reading the legislation, reading the law, reading about the projects, it seems to me there really isn't any ambiguity. There really aren't unintended consequences. 12A is crystal clear. It is a purpose-based, intent-based provision. It was meant to be the anti-Kelo legislation. We had someone stand up and say that a project should be entitled to eminent domain because it provides economic benefits or jobs or other incidental public goods. The whole point of 12A, the whole point of 12A was to redline that analysis. A project for purposes of private development is not entitled to eminent domain. Full stop. You don't need to go further. You don't need to deal with ambiguity, unintended consequences, buried lines, or Northern Pass. This is a constitutional provision, and all the bill is doing is seeking to have legislation made consistent with that very clear constitutional standard. It is very, very clear. On page 8 of my submission, of Sandy's and my submission, we were grappling with how we could draw a clear distinction between what is a public project and what's a project that is a private development project, and therefore eminent domain is not available. We were pleased to see that on May 5th, Northeast Utilities and NSTAR wrote something down that would help us make that decision, make that distinction. And we quoted that on page 8 for you. As you'll see in that quote, the May 5th filing says that participant-funded projects, private utilities projects, they're the projects that are not meant to keep the lights on. Projects not meant to keep the lights on. That's a really good way to think about it. The reason why we might want to have eminent domain for public utilities is for projects that are needed to keep the lights on. What we're talking about here is a clear distinction. A private project, a private development project, is one that is not needed. As that quote goes further, it says a private development project, a participant-funded project, is one that is proposed for social policy goals or is proposed for profit. Profit. Let's talk about profit for a moment. In the filings made by Northeast Utilities for this project, on page 501 of the filing that was made with FERC, there is a disclosure that Northeast Utilities will be paid $68 million a year, $68 million a year as a return on equity for this project, $68 million a year. Even if we didn't have 12A, even if all we had was the old constitutional standards under New Hampshire case law, I would submit that when one party to a transaction is making $68 million of profits and the alleged public benefits, tax benefits, and energy savings aggregate substantially less than that, A law student would be able to come to the conclusion, this is private, not public. Hydro-Québec is looking at this project as what we would call a billion-dollar baby. If you look at the projections for energy prices made by Public Service Company of New Hampshire, and you use those projections and the capacity of this line, you will see that over the 40-year life of this project, the transaction will generate anywhere between $39 billion, low case, and $59 billion, high case, for sales revenues for Hydro-Québec. Let's just take $50 billion as the midpoint. That kind of money for a project like this, beyond any argument, demonstrates the purpose is money. This is a private development project. It wasn't asked for by any regulator. There is no finding of regulatory need. This project is not included in any rate base. This project is not subject to the normal kind of balancing of cost and benefit that goes into a rate-based determination. This project was initiated for profit. This project generates huge levels of profit, and this project is a quintessential private development project that simply is not permitted by 12A.
Thank you, Mr. Dennis. I have a question for you. Yeah, I have a question, which is are they mutually exclusive that there can be profit and a public purpose?
Absolutely not. Of course, regulated utilities earn a return on capital. What's mutually exclusive is private purpose and public purpose. For better or worse, that's the dichotomy that the people of this state have set up. They have said that eminent domain may not be used for projects with a private development purpose.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Question.
Thank you so much for coming this afternoon, Mr. Dennis, and thank you very much for what looks to be a very detailed analysis of what's going on. One of the things that I would like to just ask you about, you keep referring to private, but the amendment here says no public utility. And I'm wondering, is there really, I know the difference between public and private, but does this amendment, does this piece of legislation really address to what you're speaking of? Because I don't know if you are.
Sure, and I believe the amendment does address that. The amendment arose because of the emergence of a new kind of transaction, participant-funded or merchant transmission lines, which again have the key elements I said. They're initiated privately, they're initiated for a profit purpose, there's no statement of need, and there's essentially no regulation. The original legislation would have said that participant-funded or merchant transactions are not entitled to eminent domain. As we heard from the Public Utilities Commission, a suggestion was made that rather than categorize transactions not entitled to eminent domain, we'll categorize transactions that we believe should be entitled. Public utilities. Without a doubt, Northern Pass is a public utility. It's a federal public utility. It will be a state public utility. But just because an entity is a public utility does not entitle it to eminent domain. My daughter, Larissa, could take a piece of our land and put up a hydro plant, and she could say, you know, I'm generating electricity. That makes her a definitional public utility under the definition used by the PUC, under the statutory definition. If my daughter Larissa puts up a hydro plant and says she'd like to run a line across your land to sell power to the chairman for her profit, should she be entitled to do that? No, she should not. What is the point? Public utility definition is grossly overbroad. Anyone who owns or operates a transmission or generation asset is a public utility. And so the distinction you're being asked to draw is that public utilities may use 371.1 for public projects, i.e. a project like a reliability project. Public utilities may not use 371.1 for a quintessentially private transaction, one generated for the purpose of profit and flatly prohibited by 12A.
Thank you, Mr. Dennis.